Welcome back to another Patriots podcast. It's week seven. I am Matt Dolliff. I'm back with Alex Barth of 985thesportshub.com. I took a week off. I took a vacation, which was supposed to be during the Patriots bye week, but thanks, COVID, got pushed back. And, you know, it was a blessing in disguise because, you know, I was out on vacation in Seattle visiting my sister and her new baby. Had a great time. Didn't have a great time watching that debacle against the Broncos. But we don't have to talk too much about that game because not that I want to use the lack of practice as an excuse, but I think the whole thing, Alex, about people giving Belichick a bunch of crap for not having the team ready to go, I think was a little ridiculous because I think Belichick is so great because of how he prepares and you know how he prepares when he actually has his team on the field. So you take that away from Bill and, you know, it's not going to look as good. So I think that's just a one-off, but, you know, it's still a bad loss. I don't want to use that as an excuse. They have to bounce back and they have to, you know, now they have to now go out and win a game that they're supposed to lose. Like they got to beat Baltimore or they got to beat Buffalo twice or they got to beat the San Francisco 49ers this weekend at home. And I think any one of those is going to be a tall task. And before we really get into the nuts and bolts of this weekend's game, which is borderline must-win for the Patriots, I got to bring up a tweet by our old pal Evan Lazar, who is doing the you know one of the worst things you can do as a human, which is argue with idiots on Twitter. And people are arguing with him. People are saying he's arguing that Bill Belichick is right about not wanting to pay pass rushers because the logic is it's more important to pay or it's more important to have good coverage than a good pass rush, and it's also more affordable to pay, you know, a top of the market cornerback than a top of the market pass rusher. I completely agree. You can scheme up a pass rush. You can't exactly scheme coverage, especially if you need man-to-man coverage. You need talent at cornerback. So, and I mean, that's sort of showing up with the Patriots secondary the last few years. So, but he says, you know, I understand the frustrations lately, but the lack of faith in Bill Belichick lately is crazy. And I responded, lately? Guy's been getting ripped up and down for a decade, and I think we know some of the people we can hold responsible for some of that. But he responded, it makes me want to punch Alex Barth in the face. And I was wondering what his logic was behind that. So could you have an explanation for that?
Yeah, so per source, I texted him. That had nothing to do with me. Like I thought maybe he was saying that, you know, I'm the one disagreeing with Belichick when I wrote the column this week, 985thesportshub.com. Defending the decision to not challenge the James White third down play.
Yes,
go read it. There's actually some interesting logic behind that, and I stand by it. So
Alex literally has a zip line from his bedroom to the lighthouse in Foxborough. So I doubt he's the one who's been ripping Belichick the last 10 years.
Right. I'm a grown man, and I am, as we record this, I'm looking at my Tom Brady and Drew Bledsoe bobbleheads. So right. I'm like, no, that was just it makes him angry. And when he's angry, he wants to punch me. I appreciate all the random people liking that tweet, calling for violence on my behalf. Yeah, I'm not saying I don't deserve it, but
yeah, he's arguing with an angry, dumb mob on Twitter. He literally just turns to his right and punches you for no reason. That seems like a logical action.
That's why I had to leave CLNS and come here.
Yes, exactly. We keep you safe. I merely poison you if I'm mad, you know, so
I'll take that. Quick, painless. I don't know about it.
Yeah, exactly. So, all right. Well, big week coming up for the Patriots. Let's get into the 49ers a little bit. I think the big question is what's the more important side of the ball for the Patriots this week? Is it more important for them to stop this Kyle Shanahan offense? The guy's a wizard. Is it more important for them to make Jimmy Garoppolo look bad and to stop that zone blocking scheme? Or is it more important for Cam Newton and the offense to get their asses in gear and get back on the same page and prove that yesterday was more of just a one-off, and as long as they have a full week of practice, they'll look much better. What do you think is more important?
Well, like long-term, I guess that's kind of a complicated question. Long-term, I want to see the offense put something together because it's been a couple weeks now since we've seen that, and obviously there's underlying circumstances to that, but still, you'd like to see them shake off the rust. To win this game, though, I think it's on the defense because – San Francisco has a good defense to begin with, even as banged up as they are. They've still got some great players. And I think the defense is going to need to. And it's, again, the Belichick homer in me, I'm going to quote him here, complimentary football. I think to win this game, the offense is certainly rusty. They've struggled. and the San Francisco defense is very good. So you need the defense to set the offense up with short fields. You need turnovers like you got last week. You need quick three and outs deep in their own territory defensively, which they did not get right last week against the Broncos. So this, to answer your question, this week I'm looking more at the defense. I think a strong defensive effort does more going towards a win this week than a strong offensive effort. That being said, we got to see the spark again from the offense at some point. They were good, not great against the Raiders. And then you can write off the next two games, but the reality is there's still rust there. The reason that you write off those games is guys didn't play, but that doesn't mean they're going to come back in and get right back into shape. They need to prove it. So for me, I want to see the offense shake off the rust. I don't think that's this week. I think there's a better chance that's next week. I believe next week is the Buffalo game. I feel like I'm missing one in between. But, so I'm looking at the
Jets. You're missing.
I thought the Jets is after Buffalo.
Oh, it is. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. So Buffalo. So, you know, I want to see the offense shake off the rust for the big picture thing. But this week they need a strong defensive performance. Absolutely.
I tend to agree because Kyle Shanahan's strength is obviously on the offensive side of the ball. He's a brilliant offensive coach. And, I mean, we could get into, like, the head coaching stuff, which he hasn't been the most consistent guy in the league in that department. But offensively, I mean, the zone blocking scheme, it's always been hard to stop. And the concern that I have, Alex, is that the Patriots' defense is much, much better equipped to stop a passing offense. They have deep secondary. And I just don't think they're as stout up front as you would want to be against an offense like this. And the thing about the zone blocking is it's good that the Patriots probably have the discipline and the patience to contain that offense. But it's that offense where that you can stop them. You can stop it on any given play, which all you need is one guy to break through that the zone blocking. And you can stop the guy at the line or for a loss of yardage or whatever. But all it takes is that one play where they get everybody sealed off perfectly and you break off that big play. They had the second longest run of the season, the Niners do, when Raheem Mostert took it 80 yards to the around the edge of the sideline and all the way to the end zone on the first play from scrimmage. And that was against the New York Jets, who suck. And I don't think the Patriots are going to give up an 80-yard touchdown. But I mean, this just goes to Bill Belichick's philosophy of defense. Not every play is going to be an 80-yard touchdown. So I mean, you can live with a 2 or 3 yard run as long as you eventually break off that big play. And so I sort of think it's the same thing with this Niners offense. And it's not so simple with Shanahan. Like a lot of teams run that zone blocking scheme out of 11 personnel with just the one back and the tight end, but Shanahan will do it with two backs on the field. He'll do it with the fullback, Kyle Juszczyk. He'll do it with George Kittle. He'll move those guys and put them in motion before the snap. He'll disguise. He'll set up play action. And it can be very confusing for defense. And I'm not saying the Patriots defense is going to be confused, but I'm just not sure they have the personnel to, stop that offense, stop that sort of scheme, 20 times in one game. So, I mean, I don't know. Do you share the same concerns as me?
Kind of, yeah. I guess I just look at it a different way. I'm concerned about them defending the run, and it's not even about the running backs because it looks like they're going to be without Raheem Mostert, right? So I'm worried about them focusing so much, like you're talking about, and not letting that zone open up. And then, boom, here comes a end around to Deebo Samuel, and he's gone up the sideline 60 yards. Like that, yes. To me, because they do, and Bill kind of talked about this week, that they, some teams – or it wasn't Bill, it might have been Devin McCourty, that, some teams, no team's going to run something they're bad at, but some teams have a bread and butter, that one thing they know they can rely on, they'll go to when they need to. Everything else they do sets up that one strength. The Niners don't operate that way. Everything they do, they don't do a ton, but everything they do extremely well. And I'd argue that's even more dangerous. It's one thing to catch opponents off guard because eventually – you reach the bottom of the bag. It's all on tape. There's no more surprises. If you can line up, the opponent knows exactly what you're going to do and you can still execute it. Like there's no way to stop that. So the Niners aren't perfect in that regard, but again, you have to put so much focus on that zone run between the tackles that they send that receiver in motion, bang, handoff, guy gets it, full head of steam, and he's gone around the other side. Pop pass, too, is another play that's kind of a similar situation. So that's where, if I'm looking at what's going to be the big play the Patriots give up this week, I'm looking at a long run by Deebo Samuel, by Brandon Ayuk, or a pop pass or something where those guys get the ball in the backfield yards after the catch and they're just flying down the sideline.
Yeah, I tend to agree with that too. Yeah, you saw it against the Rams where, like I was saying before, they would might show you 11 personnel, but then all of a sudden Deebo Samuel turns into a running back and, you know,
right.
All of a sudden you're creating mismatches and it's just harder to block. So, I mean, it's going to take a lot of preparation, but I also give Kyle Shanahan a lot of credit for, you know, creating those new wrinkles, something you might not have seen before. So they sort of have to expect the unexpected and almost be prepared for those new wrinkles. But, I mean, that's just hard to do. But, you know, the good thing is that they're back at practice and COVID hasn't reinvaded Foxborough yet. So,
yeah, knock on wood.
I know, seriously. So, I mean, it's going to take a lot of discipline and they're going to have to, you know, they're going to have to work as a unit just as the Niners work as a unit. That doesn't really play into the Patriots' hands that they like to play man-to-man. They don't like to, you know, defend against a zone offense. They don't want to play a zone defense. And they're probably going to need guys like Devin McCourty to play closer to the line and play more of a run-tackling role. So, yeah, I don't know. I guess we'll see how that goes. Defensively, they've been getting a lot of pressure without necessarily getting a lot of sacks. They've been rushing throws. They've been, you know, keeping guys in the pocket, collapsing the pocket, things like that. They're sixth in QB knockdown pressure, fifth in hurry percentage. They don't have a lot of sacks again, but they're sixth in QB pressure percentage. And, you know, they're good. They have a good opposing passer rating. So, I mean, Cam Newton, not a good game at all last week. So I think we got to hope there's no residual effects from him having COVID-19 and not having that time off.
Right. And he certainly looked rusty, but I think, you know, it was very contentious on Twitter this week. You know, was it on Cam? Was it right? He took the right week off. Was it on Cam? Was it on the line? Was it on the receivers? And I think that that's just such an ignorant way to look at football, especially offensively. If the game didn't go well, there's likely not one person to blame. Like, I don't remember the last time I watched a football game where a team played bad for 60 minutes and you could circle one player or one position and say, that's the reason, you know? So
right.
I think Cam's mechanics were certainly off in that game. I think he was looking at open receivers that he and just didn't pull the trigger. It was bizarre. I've never seen him do that. If anything, he's been overly aggressive. So I don't know what that was, but you also had, he kind of, you know, I think the mental clock was off a little bit and he was throwing off balance quite a bit because there was pressure and the offensive line didn't play well because it was a patchwork. And then you didn't, you know, the receivers were separating, I think, more than people realized, but they had trouble with it on the key plays, right? The 2-point conversion. There was a third down late in the game where you could tell they drew up a little dig route for Edelman. And that, I mean, that's been bread and butter in New England for 8 years, that route. And he just couldn't get away from the defender. So everybody needs to play better. I certainly think practice was a big part of it. And we'll see. I guess we'll get that question answered this week because they're going to have their two most competitive days of practice, right? They got out there today, so those are in the books. Nothing with that. They'll have a half day tomorrow and then the walkthrough on Saturday, but it looks right now as if all that's going to happen. So we'll see.
Let's take a quick break, just 15 seconds, and we'll be right back.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
What is up with Devin Asiasi? He played a good amount in that Broncos game, especially after Ryan Izzo fumbled. He played a lot. And I mean, but the thing is, like, they didn't really use him in a variety of routes. He just did like a quick out to the flat on almost every play. But here's the thing. He got open. They were giving him a nice little cushion. They were almost like, we know that Cam Newton's not even going to look at this guy. So, like, what the hell is going on there? I tweeted, I was like, if Ryan Izzo is going to fumble, if he's going to make a catch and then fumble the ball away, then I'm ready to see what Devin Asiasi could do with the ball in his hands. So, I don't know. I hope Bill Belichick saw that and shows Cam the film and says, look, the kid was open. Throw him the damn ball.
Yeah, no, it's an excellent question. And I've kind of been trying to rationalize it. I think we're getting there. Because he barely played week one, Asiasi, right? but he's been building snaps. He's been playing more and more, and not just total snaps. You can go by percentage in this conversation because, you know, you could run 70 snaps 1 week, 45 the next week, but the percentage was higher in the 45 game, whatever. So he's been playing more and more as the season has gone on, with the exception of the Kansas City game, but I'm fine throwing that one out the window. That was going to be a run first game before Cam went out with COVID. And then, of course, you lost Cam Newton. Izzo's still the better blocking tight end. That made sense. But you take that game away, and Asiasi's played more and more each week. They are easing him in. This is what they do with rookies. Bill has said this is what they're going to do with the rookies without a preseason. It was going to take time. So to say that they're completely ignoring him is a bit much, because they are putting him on the field. He played over 40% of snaps on Sunday. That's for a number two tight end, right? You want him to be the number one. But for a number two tight end to play over 40% of snaps is a significant number. They trust him enough to put him out there. Now, why isn't he getting the ball? I think it's a combination of things. On the surface, Cam's not a check down guy. He's never been a check down guy. He doesn't really care about what's in the flat.
Right. He wants
to look at He looked at Asiasi a couple times. You saw him there. He didn't throw the ball. I don't know if that was rust, or I have another theory I'll get to in a second, but he didn't throw him the ball. Asiasi's strength, though, at least in college, was going up the seam. You line him up in line, in the slot. You send him straight up the seam. Patriots love that route with tight ends. They do, especially because then when you want to throw the ball to the running backs, it kind of clears the linebackers out of the middle of the field. You can get the Texas route going, helps on the screen game, stuff like that. So I wonder if they are more comfortable of throwing him the ball in that situation. Of course, they have to put him in that situation to do so. And it goes back to Bill saying without the preseason, they're worried about rookies being ready, and maybe they don't want to throw him the ball where a safety could be lurking and come in and take his head off, right? He's not ready for that.
Yep.
The other theory this is purely a theory, tinfoil hat on. This is based off nothing. Like, a lot of the times I base these things off something Bill Belichick said 10, 15 years ago. This goes against everything Bill Belichick believes in. But
what is it? Here's
the thing. At a certain point, the guy's wide open, and they're not throwing him the ball. I wonder if it's an element of this guy didn't get any preseason. He's never played in the NFL. Let's get him out there for a couple games. Let him get jammed on the line. Let him run NFL routes. But Cam, don't throw him the ball. We're not ready.
How could you have that take? You're a horrible person. Sorry.
But here's the thing. If somebody said it to me, I would have the same reaction you just did. I wouldn't agree, because Bill Belichick's whole thing has always been, if we put you out there, we expect you to make the play. We expect you, if you're on the field, the ball can come your way. Be ready for it. But I'm running out of other explanations, because, again, this should be an exaggeration. It's not. Cam's looking right at him. There's no defender within 15 yards for him. He has room to run. Cam half cocks the ball and puts it back down. Why? It has to be Bill or Josh. Like, the only thing I can think of is Bill or Josh are in his ear saying, this kid's not ready to get the ball. We're going to put him out there to let him run routes because we want to see it, but we don't want to see him with the ball in his hands. But it has to come eventually. I thought it was going to be last week. Again, he played 42% based on the pattern. He should play at least 50% of snaps this week. He should take over as the number one tight end this week, or definitely next week. If it's not this week, definitely next week, based on the way they've been ramping him up. So if we don't see it, if he's playing over 50% of the snaps and they're still not throwing him the ball, that's a major concern, because essentially you're playing 11 on 10 at that point.
I totally agree. And to your point, like, he was getting open on those quick outs on those fourth quarter drives where it would make perfect sense to throw him the ball. And, you know, there's not even a worry about him getting his head taken off, because he's going to catch the ball and go right out of bounds to stop the clock. So, I mean, I don't think they would purposely, like, run him out there and play 11 on 10 and say, don't even throw him the ball. We just wanted to get out there and run routes and see what it's like to get jammed and all that stuff. It's an interesting theory. And, I mean, if you sort of tried to ask Bill about that, he would probably say, I mean, try to move the ball and score points. I think he'd probably say something along those lines. But, they put him out there after – sorry, go ahead.
No, like, I want to ask him about it, but I don't want to end up on ESPN. Like, how do you ask him, Bill, are you telling Cam not to throw the ball to Devin Asiasi? Are you purposely ignoring an open play? Like, I'm going to go – that'll go viral if that happens. Right. I'll lose my credential if that – I don't know how to ask that question. And, again, I don't necessarily think that that's true. I'm more so just throwing that idea out there to prove a point that this is how ridiculous it's gotten. This is how far out of the way they've gone to not get this guy the football, and there really is no logical explanation for it. The other one, Dalton Keene, because people put Dalton Keene in the same conversation. Dalton, real quick, because I know we're going long. We're doing a ton on two guys who basically haven't played, but I think people need to hear this. Dalton Keene, to me, is a little different. Dalton Keene is going to play a different role than Asiasi. He's going to be more of a fullback. You're essentially asking him play in and play out to lower his head into contact, and this is a guy who's coming off a neck injury. I understand being incredibly cautious in that scenario. Even though he's technically not on the injury report anymore, he's like not hurt. We all know what neck injury means, and you're asking him to play a very physical – like James Devlin just had to retire because of a neck injury. I understand them being especially cautious with a neck injury. The Dalton Keene thing I have no problem with. Take your time with that kid. It's fine. Mm-hmm. Asiasi's different. There's no logic here. Like there's nothing – I have not heard one – the reason I gave is not a legitimate football reason. It was a hyperbole. I have not heard one legitimate football reason for why he's not just getting two or three checkdowns a game.
Well, I have been tracking him and like everyone's offensive snaps in the package report, as you know, for 95thesportshub.com. And I think – I know there's been like talk and rumors that they're just not confident in him, you know, internally, which I mean it's – I don't think that's really an indictment on him as a player because he is a rookie and, you know, he did miss a little bit of time in training camp and he had trouble, you know, staying on the field a little bit in camp from what we saw. But, I mean, his mere snap counts and the way they're using him suggest that they are – that they are confident in him and they're just sort of easing him in. So it was just a little bizarre that he kept getting open and they played him most of the snaps after almost every snap really after the Izzo fumble. So maybe that was
right.
Them saying like, this is your time. We're going to start the transition now and we'll see. But I mean, I think that today might be a good time to ask Cam Newton about Devin Asiasi to see if he starts pumping his tires a little bit like he did with Harry. It's the biggest question is what is everyone's tweet going to be like when he finally catches a pass? There's going to be a lot of like siren emojis, a lot of Devin Asiasi alerts, Devin Asiasi watch, Devin Asiasi is alive, breaking news, Devin Asiasi is playing. You know,
so
I need to come up. We need to come up with something more creative. I'm just warning you.
Well, I had this at the draft. I always associate his last name with Foghorn Leghorn. So I say
that's pretty good.
I see. He finally caught a ball. Like I see. Like yes. I've always thought of Foghorn Leghorn. So I will probably do something related to that.
Someone responded to me. I think he'll be just okay. And I was like, Spanish. I get it. Did you ever take Spanish class?
No, I took French. It was easier.
Oh, you uncultured swine.
How are you going to call me uncultured for taking – that's like culture is French.
Oh,
I remember maybe
French.
Five words.
No, it's useless compared to
that
Spanish.
That was the point of high culture. I remember we used to – teacher brought in croissants every
Friday. Oh, my God. My high school had German and Latin in addition to Spanish and French. I only took Spanish, though.
There was Latin. I couldn't take German. Too much yelling. I do enough of that already.
I once in the office, I said ESPN Deportes, and you were like, oh, my God, that Spanish pronunciation.
I am floored by people who can roll their R's. I can't. Like, I can't really do it. Yeah.
I learned that from singing System of a Down. I don't know if you're familiar with that band, but
I've heard of them. I don't
the singer
know what song
rolls his
about.
R's for no reason. He'll say like protest instead of protest. It's
see
weird.
That
it's
I wish
weirdo.
I could do that. I can do the like the grunting R because like going to Celtics games growing up and then I was the PA announcer for our basketball team in high school.
Yeah.
I would do like the or I remember the sounds getting Rajon Rondo, like that's the closest.
Rajon Rondo.
Yeah, see, you can roll it. I just do it like I like it's just a guttural.
Yeah, yeah, I make voices. Anyway, we only have a few minutes left. I want to get your take real quick on the Patriots All Dynasty team, which came out earlier today. A little odd. I think we're a little concerned that they're giving up, that they don't think the dynasty is going to continue. They don't think there will be a third iteration of the dynasty. It's basically the all guys that played with Tom Brady and Bill Belichick.
Correct.
A couple of weird omissions. Deion Branch is one. I don't know how you don't – I don't know how the MVP of one of their Super Bowls doesn't even get an honorable mention. One of the only guys besides Brady to not to win the Super Bowl MVP is doesn't even get an honorable mention. The receivers
especially
were Moss,
with Danny Amendola being on there.
Yeah, Randy Moss, Wes Welker, Julian Edelman, I get, but Amendola gets the honorable mention over Deion Branch. So that was odd. Another one I thought was glaring was Malcolm Butler. The cornerbacks were Ty Law and Stephon Gilmore, you get. But then the third one was Asante Samuel, who I thought was a very, very good player, but they never won with Asante. I mean, was Asante Samuel here in 04? I forget if he was here in 04.
Yeah, no, he was 03 and 04. 03 and 04. He won two here.
I guess that's their argument.
Yeah.
But Malcolm Butler made arguably the most pivotal play in the history of the franchise. That play was the difference between Tom Brady winning his fourth Super Bowl and being 3-3 in Super Bowls, and who knows where the hell the franchise goes from there if Pete Carroll just hands the ball off to Marshawn Lynch. So, I don't know. What are your thoughts about that list?
I thought in terms of that one, you know, I thought that, you know, this has Bill Belichick's fingerprints all over it, except for the Deion Branch thing. He loves Branch. I can't imagine he would leave Branch off. But,
so weird.
You know, a lot of this list isn't necessarily guys who had moments, but who was the long-term sustainable player, right?
Right, like Roman Pfeiffer. That.
Right, that's why a guy like Roman Pfeiffer goes on over Gerard Mayo. That's why you get a guy like Asante Samuel who, you know, Malcolm Butler had one play in one very good season and one okay season. You got four, five great seasons from Asante Samuel. Like, I was a little surprised, honestly, and I get this is a 20-year encapsulation. He was here for 1 year. But it was an incredible year. I am a little surprised you don't see Darrelle Revis in the honorable mentions.
Especially
with how much of a Belichick. And I mean, again,
he was first team all pro that year, right?
He was. And again, it was 1 year, but including a guy.
He gave up his touchdown to Doug Baldwin.
Including a guy, right? Like a Roman Pfeiffer and putting him on the main. Like, that's just such. That's Belichick's thumbprint. Including
both long
two kickoff
snappers.
Returners. Right. Two kickoff returners. Two long snappers, only one center. Corey Dillon, I would even say, over LeGarrette Blount. Dillon's peak is higher, but you got longer sustained success from Blount. I think they did a pretty good job. You know, the 10-year-old in me who watched, who grew up and learned to love the game of football in those early dynasty teams, seeing Bethel Johnson on there, seeing Dan Copen on there, Corey Dillon. You know, warmed my heart. No Brian Cox. Would have liked to see Brian Cox. But, you know, a guy like Roman Pfeiffer, like, you know, you could have much bigger problems. I saw a lot of people were upset that Patrick Chung made it on over Lawyer Malloy. But, again, if it's the dynasty team, you're looking at Lawyer Malloy for only two seasons. It would only be a 1-0-2 because then he gets traded before a 3. You're not looking at what he did with the Parcells teams. And Patrick Chung has been as sustainable as anybody here. I mean, he's put together quite a run. So, I've seen that one questioned a bit. I get that one. One other question I saw, some people didn't think James White deserved to be on there. And I saw, like, not an insignificant amount of people who wanted Deion Lewis over James White. And don't get me wrong, Deion Lewis was a fun player to watch. And when he was healthy, he was certainly a game changer. The Patriots fans infatuation with Deion Lewis, and I'm related to one. My brother is the biggest Deion Lewis fan there is. He wasn't. You know, I don't have him as a top five back. When you talk about the all around workload, right? Skill set's different. When you talk about all around contributions of the Patriots dynasty, I have Blount ahead of him. This is in no particular order. Blount, Dillon, White, Falk are all definitely ahead of him, and I might even put Vereen ahead of him too. So I don't get I don't want to say I don't get. I get the infatuation with Deion Lewis, but if he had played the way he did in 2017, fully healthy for 3 or 4 years, we can talk about it. You got 20 games of elite Deion Lewis. 20 games does not a career make.
Right. I think that's sort of like they wanted to give some props to like the undrafted guys, the guys that came out of nowhere, you know, guys that earned their spot or whatever. Why isn't Danny Woodhead on the team?
That's an interesting point. I might go through and do this. I'm curious how each one of these players was acquired and to kind of see, you know, the all decade team. Okay. You have this many first round picks, this many second round picks, this many guys acquired from trade, this many guys. Then I have to figure out how to include Patrick Chung because he's acquired twice, but I might have a little project for myself here.
All right. Well, you get to that project. We got to get out of here. Patriots media availability coming up. And but no, that was good stuff. I had to do my homework before this podcast because you're so knowledgeable with the Patriots and football stuff. I gotta you know, really step up my game when I talk football with you. But all right, thanks for listening, guys. Big game for the Patriots. I say it's pretty much a must-win game. So hopefully you enjoyed listening, and we'll talk to you again next week.